If you've recently inherited an annuity, there's a good chance you're feeling confused, stressed, or even a little pressured to make a decision quickly. You might be asking questions like, do I have to take the money out right away? How much will I owe in taxes? Can I move this, or am I stuck with it? And today I want to slow things down to walk you through what really matters when you inherit an annuity. Before you sign the paperwork and trigger a tax bill you cannot undo. Hi, everyone. My name is Marty Becker. I'm the owner and founder of Atlas Financial Strategies in St. Louis, Missouri, where we specialize in safe money retirement strategies. Let's start with why inherited annuities are so confusing. Non-qualified inherited annuities are confusing for one simple reason. They don't follow the same rules as something like an inherited IRA. And they don't work like regular non-qualified, meaning after-tax dollar, investment accounts either. On top of that, the insurance company also gives you a stack of forms and a deadline to turn those forms in, but they really don't explain what they mean. Here's the key thing most people don't realize. Once you make certain choices with an inherited annuity, they're irreversible. Once you get that money, you can't go back and change the way you got that money. The two big questions you need to ask are, who did you inherit it from, and what type of money was in that annuity? Now, the rules change depending on who you inherited it from, and if the money was qualified, meaning it's all been tax deferred, like an IRA, or non-qualified, meaning the money that the original owner put into the annuity already had the taxes paid on it. That means non-qualified. That's after tax, not tax deferred. So if you inherited this annuity from a spouse, you usually have the most flexibility. And in most cases, you can even just continue the annuity as if it were your own. Now, if you inherited this annuity from a parent, a sibling, or someone else, the rules are a lot tighter, okay? You generally must begin taking distributions within the first year of the original owner's passing, okay? So from their date of death, 1 year, you have to take a distribution. And the timeline matters, okay? This distinction alone can mean the difference between smart tax planning and unnecessary taxes. Now, again, disclaimer here, I am not a tax professional. This is not tax advice. This is general information only for educational purposes. So always consult with a tax professional for any specific or personal questions about any type of inheritance that you've received. Now, again, as general information, how do these taxes actually work? Because this is where the most mistakes happen. With a qualified tax deferred inherited annuity, or any financial product for that matter, you are taxed on the entire amount as it comes out to you. Now, here's a little key point, okay? Not totally relative to what we're talking about, but if you are under 59 and a half, okay, and you're going to need access to the money from a deceased spouse's IRA, or it doesn't even have to be a spouse. But if you're under 59 and a half, you get left someone's IRA, regardless of the product, you may want to highly consider keeping that in their name or as a non-spousal inherited IRA. That way you can access the money without the 10% IRS penalty. And really, this does pertain to a spouse because if your spouse dies, you're under 59 and a half, and now you move the IRA into your name, okay, now you own the IRA, which means you cannot access that money until you're 59 and a half. So just if you're in that situation, go talk with a tax professional to get a really clear understanding of how that works. Because if you're going to need the money, you're under 59 and a half, you're going to lock it up if you put it in your own name. Now, if this is a non-spousal qualified inheritance, you have 10 years to withdraw all the money, okay, full stop. You have to get it out within 10 years, unless you're what's known as an eligible designated beneficiary. What that means is that you are within 10 years of age of the person who left it to you. For example, if you inherited from a sibling who's close in age with you, or if you're a minor child of the descendant, or you're disabled or chronically ill. Okay, there's very specific rules on how that works. And then if you are an eligible designated beneficiary, then you can take the withdrawals based on a single life expectancy table and actually take smaller chunks out over a longer period of time, therefore hopefully minimizing the amount of taxes you pay. This is where it starts to get a little confusing for people. So we're going to talk about specifically a non-qualified, meaning the taxes were already paid on the original amount that was put into the annuity, a non-qualified and non-spousal inherited annuity. That means you got an annuity from someone who wasn't your spouse, and it doesn't matter who else it was, and it's non-qualified. The person already paid the taxes when they put it in. Keep in mind, you're only going to be taxed on the gains, not the original principal that was put in there. But this is critical. The distributions are going to be taxed by something called LIFO for short. That means last in, first out. That means all of the taxable earnings, so all of the gains inside of that annuity, are going to come out before that tax-free principal that was originally put into the annuity. Translation. The first dollars you take out of a non-qualified, non-spousal inherited annuity are often going to be the most heavily taxed. Okay. I've seen people take these large lump sums because it just feels simple. And what can happen is you accidentally push yourself into a much higher tax bracket. For example, if you're in a 12% tax bracket right now and you're right on the cusp of 24, you can very easily double the amount of taxes that you're going to have to pay if you take the lump sum. Now, a slower, more intentional distribution strategy can often reduce the lifetime taxes dramatically. So what are these options? You basically have three. Option number one is the lump sum distribution. Again, this is where you take all the money at once. And again, people choose this because it feels simple, or they just want the immediate access to the cash. And you don't want to have to deal with ongoing paperwork from getting a distribution form from the annuity company every year and having to give that to your tax person. I get it. But the hidden downside, again, is the taxable gain is going to be recognized all in 1 year. So depending on how much that annuity has grown from when the original owner funded it, it could be a lot. Okay. And what happens is, again, this often pushes people into a much higher tax bracket, and then you permanently lose the ability to spread those taxes over time. Now, this can make sense for people who are usually in a lower income year. Maybe you just retired and you don't have that earned income, or you sold your business. You don't have that self-employed income. Maybe the annuity wasn't that old and it just doesn't have that much gain in it, so it's not that big a deal. Or you just need the money for something that's time sensitive, which I get, okay, that's life. Who this is usually bad for, making the lump sum distribution, are high earners, high income earners, or anyone who is close to that next tax bracket. And people who don't actually need the money right away. So why take it all out and suffer the consequences of it? Option two of the three options is what's called the five-year distribution rule. Now remember, with the inherited IRA, you get 10 years. With non-qualified annuities, you get 5 years. And you must fully empty the annuity by the end of the fifth year. But you control the timing of when you take it out. If you take a big chunk the first year, or throughout the middle, or evenly distribute it, that's up to you. And people normally choose this option because it is a little more flexible than the lump sum. And it does give you the ability to spread that income over 5 years. And it's easier than the lifetime calculations. Now, you don't have to do those calculations. We'll talk about that in the next option. But the big advantage to this option is you can better manage your tax brackets, okay? and you decide whether to take the money evenly or unevenly. It is useful for some income smoothing, okay? But the downside is it's still relatively a smaller window to get that money out, which, again, larger balances can still cause you to get bumped into a higher tax bracket. And it can be some poor planning by bunching that income into the final year. But this does normally work well for people who are retiring soon, or maybe who have just retired. Someone who would be expecting a lower income over the next few years, and beneficiaries who want to control, but not really take the longer commitment of the lifetime payout. And then the final option is a single life expectancy. Okay. What this is just required distributions that are calculated using the IRS single life expectancy table, which you can Google and easily find. And again, that's starting within the first year of inheritance. People choose this one because the distributions are smaller. And remember, those are required every year. It gives you the maximum tax deferral on the gains that are inside the annuity and any gains that may be acquired while it's in your name. And it helps with long-term planning flexibility. The biggest benefit to this option is it often results in the lowest annual taxable income. The taxes are spread over decades, not years. And then you retain the flexibility to take more if you need it. Okay? Because remember, with annuities, the majority of them starting after the second year, you can take up to 10% once you're out of the original term, whether it's 5, 7, or 10 years, then all of the money's freed up and then you take it however you want. But if you want to spread it out, you would do it by the single life expectancy table. The trade-off is, of course, there's more paperwork and monitoring because you're going to receive a tax statement every year. And the rules must be followed precisely. Now, the annuity company does this for you. The other trade-off is not all annuity contracts allow for this option. There's a limited number of companies that will accept a non-qualified, non-spousal inherited annuity. This option is normally best for people with higher incomes or people who don't need the income. And if you're focused on tax efficiency and legacy, meaning spreading the money out, making it last as long as possible, and maybe even passing it on to the next person. Here are a few of the common mistakes people make with inherited annuities. Mistake one, again, taking the lump sum without understanding the tax consequences. Mistake number two, letting the insurance company default you into a payout option. Number three, assuming all annuities are the same. They most definitely are not, okay? The annuity that the original owner had may not be very good. And now you have the opportunity to move it to something much better, but you have to know what's available out there. And mistake number four is rushing because you think you have to make this decision immediately. Okay, they gave you all this paperwork, they're pressuring you to get it back in, because at the end of the day, they want it off their books, or they want to know what they're going to have to do with it. You have 12 months. Okay, you have 12 months to take the first distribution. And again, how you take that distribution will set the precedence for how you have to take the rest of the distributions. In most cases, you do have time, but only if you don't sign the wrong form too quickly. The smartest first step after inheriting an annuity is not choosing a payout. It's getting clarity. And that means understanding the type of annuity that you have inherited, the taxable versus non-taxable portion, your distribution options, and how that fits into a broader financial and tax picture. Again, get advice from a tax professional. But then also, which is really important, is finding out which annuity companies will actually accept the annuity you haven't inherited, and out of those, which one will give you the best rates to hopefully continue that annuity growing in value. Okay, that's where a guy like me would come in. And once you understand those pieces, the decision usually becomes much clearer. okay, and far less stressful, having someone to guide you through this gauntlet of all this paperwork you're going to be getting. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining me. This has been episode number 101 of the Atlas Annuity Podcast. If you know someone or if you have inherited an annuity, please share this information with them. If you're just coming across this podcast by accident and you're curious about annuities and how they work, the best option at this point would be to go to atlasannuity.com. Click on the videos tab, and then you're going to see my 5-part video series called 20% More Spendable Income in Retirement. Or if you've been looking at this, kicking it around, you're in a unique situation, you have questions about your personal situation, then book a short Zoom call at atlasannuity.com and get your questions answered. And as always, we thank you for joining us. If you're liking the information, subscribe, give us a thumbs up, share it, all that good stuff. But again, this is Marty Becker, thanking you for joining us for episode 101 of the Atlas Annuity Podcast. I'm wishing you all the best in your financial education.